you're live on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And Drew,
you're still here. Oh, maybe we're not live. Now we're live. Or maybe. Possibly we're live. I don't know. Here's an idea. Facebook and fucking Instagram and everybody else. Leave the fucking shit alone. Just leave it alone. It all works. Quit fucking with it. It's so goddamn annoying. Oh my lord. There's an update for everything every freaking week. They just totally changed the way we do the show on Facebook. They've changed the way we do it on freaking Instagram. Just leave it alone. When it works, leave it alone. Not that freaking hard. Anyway. All right. I guess this is working. I hope it's working.
I'm trying to check it.
On the freaking Facebook, I have no idea. It just does what it does. It looks like Instagram's working, so that's good. Whatever. All right, we're coming to you live from the Air 500 Armor Studio. Still shut down as far as the shop is concerned, like most places, still shut down.
We're live.
Just show me the bodies, man. I just want to see the bodies. Show me the stacks of bodies that are required for this. I saw a great meme earlier Drew shared with me. It was, quarantine is when you control the movements of sick people, but tyranny is when you control the movements of healthy people.
True story.
And to everybody who shits on people who collect welfare, if you have a stimulus check, if you collect VA benefits, if you're cashing in on taking advantage of the freaking government's free money in any way, shape, or form, I'm sorry. You're on welfare. There, I finally said it. The government takes care of everybody, and everybody is on the tip. If you receive a government tax refund every year, that ain't a tax refund. It's a government gift. Most people get back more than they pay in. Or even if you get back everything you paid in, then you didn't actually pay anything in and you participated in the shittiest savings account known to man, where you give your money to the government, let them use it, and then they give it back to you later with no interest. Oh, this kind of stuff, this whole coronavirus thing, should just show people the government fucking hates you.
Yeah.
They hate you. They hate liberty. They want nothing. They want absolutely nothing good for any of us. They want to destroy our economy. They want to shut down small businesses. They absolutely 100% want control. And for all these freedom fighters that are all fired up about mola and labia and freaking don't tread on me and got tattooed on their bodies and gay shit like that, where the fuck are you?
Yeah.
Because right now, do you know what's happening? People are literally flying drones. Cops are flying drones over people and monitoring social distancing. Drew and I were just trying to like plan a trip maybe because there's so many crazy things going on right now. So we're like, hey, maybe we should just plan a trip and just get the hell out of here, right?
Yeah.
And with one of the places we were looking to go, you have to basically be quarantined when you show up for 14 days. And then while you're there, they monitor you.
Yeah, when you leave, you have to check in with them. And then you have to notify the authorities where you're going, how long you're going to be there for. And then when you plan on coming back.
Probably my favorite video to date, I might have even talked about it last week, was the dude. Yeah, we did, because the Waltons were in here. And the guy on the beach, still my favorite freaking video. Yeah. He's just run along the beach, man, and enjoying his morning run. And there's this cop like, oh, excuse me, sir, you can't be here, And he's like, catch me, woo! And he fucking just takes off and totally leaves that cop in the dust like, And here, all the hordes of people out there who are going like, oh, the cops would never come and take our shit or whatever. And here they are literally enforcing orders to keep people at home.
Yep.
For what? Where are the bodies? Where are the stacks of bodies? Where are the graves that where this stupid shit is even fucking required? This stupid shit doesn't even do anything. All this shit... All you stupid fucking companies who are making your people wear this shit, you're just as dumb as our freaking government. This is the dumbest shit I have experienced in adult life to date.
Probably. I would agree.
Oh my god, it is so freaking frustrating.
Well, then all everybody can say how they survived COVID-19 to all their kids and grandkids.
Back in April 2020, I survived the Great Plague. Now they're showing all these people that they're testing who are like asymptomatic.
Yeah.
People who've actually legitimately had it and nothing even happened. And we just, for you guys who watched, of course, last week, we had the Waltons in here, Dr. Carissa Walton from the Mobile Health Doc, and we went, Drew and I went to her mobile health clinic this last week and got Drew's blood drawn, so she's going to have her antibodies checked, because we're pretty sure that Drew had the freaking coronavirus, and if she had it, I freaking had it,
yeah,
and your daughter definitely freaking had it, and yeah. A lot of other people in our lives probably freaking had it. One of our instructors has had it, still alive. Confirmed. Several of our clients have had it, confirmed.
Confirmed.
Several of our clients have had it, still alive. And all these dumb, dude, ugh. I'm trying to control myself, all right? All these freaking...
I can see it boiling.
All these people who are like, all these heroes in healthcare, and then they're like, this brave nurse stood next to a man while he died alone from coronavirus. I got news for you, dude. Nurses do that every day. Like, it's part of their job, man. It's a shitty part of their job, but it's a part of their job.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of their job. Is to add their nurses. It's to give comfort to their patients who might be dying alone of any host of diseases. There have been great nurses who have stood beside people who were dying of way worse things than the flu.
Yep.
And held their hand while they passed. And I say thank you to all those people that are in that career. You know, that job they chose that they get paid to do. This is just as bad as a veteran recognition shit. It's the same stupid shit.
Yeah. Although, I will say, when I went
frustrating
grocery shopping on Friday, when Mila and I went grocery shopping on Friday, we were at our local Fry's, and, you know, there's two young teens, like, checking us out, and one of the guy who was checking us out, he was probably, like, 19, 20-ish, but his bagger was definitely about 17, 18-ish, very young, and he was stoked that he was considered an essential worker.
Yeah.
And he was very proud of it. And it was very sweet because
cool, man.
But I was just like, he's a little kid.
Yeah. It's just another way to add recognition to mediocre shit, man. It's like, dude. coronavirus.
When is it going to end?
What a joke. All it's done is damage things.
Oh, yeah.
Not the virus, the way people have reacted to it.
It's what everybody, the government has done. Which, again, you and I were talking in the car how I feel like they did this for a reason. To obviously
test, man, to see how far they can push people.
Yeah.
All these freedom-loving patriots out there and all their body armor and their fucking guns and 10,000 rounds of ammo going like, oh, fight back, water the tree of liberty with the blood of tyrants. Hey, and then those same tyrants are like, hey, why don't you stay home for a bit, and then we'll pay you for free.
And they're like, vacation.
And they're like, oh, what? Where's my stimulus? I'm buying gear with my stimulus. I'm like, dude, you're a fucking tool. You're a tool. You don't get it. Never have got it, never gonna get it.
Yeah.
Frustrating, man.
Yep.
All right. Rant
over?
I guess. There's nothing else really to talk about, you know what I mean? What else is happening?
Everything's shut down.
We've been like thinking like, hey, let's go someplace fun, someplace we haven't been. Everything's shut down. Our kids are the same way. It's like, hey, let's go to the zoo. Shut down. Hey, let's go to the museum. Shut down. Hey, let's just go anywhere. Shut down.
Yeah.
Shut down, shut down, shut down. Now, we have been going out into the woods and going camping and doing things like that. And that's still open for now, at least for us in Arizona. There's other states we're getting hosed, man.
Yeah.
Public lands are shut down. People are being monitored. They're not allowed to go places. Yeah. It's like, oh, my gosh.
We definitely got the nicer end of the deal in Arizona.
So thank you to Governor Ducey. If any political figure is to be thanked here, it's thank you to Governor Ducey.
Yeah, because he did tell people to go outside. Because, I mean, if you think about it, we kind of quarantine ourselves in the summer because it's so fucking hot.
Yeah, Arizonans are like, well, we're just doing what we normally do.
Yeah.
I also do want to thank some people I wouldn't normally thank. Not because I don't think they're worth thanks, but I wouldn't go out of my way to thank it. I want to say a public thanks to the officials over at Ben Avery Shooting Facility.
Yeah.
They have fought to keep public shooting open. They failed in that fight, but they fought to keep it open against the state. I want everyone to know that in Arizona. Ben Avery fought to keep their government-funded facility open to the public during all this nonsense. And they didn't win that fight, but they did win the fight to keep it open for commercial user groups and law enforcement agencies. And they did a phenomenal job of keeping it open. And they do have rules that they have to enforce.
Yeah.
And they're not being dicks about it.
Yeah.
You would expect them to maybe power trip heavy. They're not. They're being really cool about it. They're being very understanding. And they're being particularly, like, they're just being cool.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate how hard they fought, because most other rangers just shut it down, man. They shut it all down. Like, nope, we're done. We don't want to take the risk. And everybody shut it down based on no fucking information, I might add.
Yeah.
No actual data did they shut out all this stuff down.
Yeah.
Just hyperbole and hypotheses. That's it. But Ben Avery fought to stay open, and I appreciate that from them.
Yeah.
Both from a personal and a professional standpoint, I think it was really good of them to do that.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Several of you guys have texted me or messaged us lately and said, oh, we miss your ranch. You haven't ran it in a while. There you go. There's more where that came from. You want me to keep going, just send me a message and I'm ready. Yes, messaging a
or
couple.
Or whatever topic.
Yeah, whatever. You want me to rant about cats? I'll fucking go for it, man. Do I have a rant about cats, by the way? Holy shit, could I go on? All right, let's see. Maybe it's time for a camping trip. Yeah, forest is still open, beautiful. Absolutely, those
that's
are comments on our
just,
Facebook.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's what we're saying. Like, we're still, we went out this weekend, took the kids up north, and you would think, beautiful weather, right? Everyone's quarantined or whatever. You would think people would be out there. They're not.
Yeah.
I mean, we bumped into half a dozen people. Most of them were camped toward the freeway, which is normal.
Yeah.
Once we got off the beaten path, there was two other people we bumped into. Two other people we bumped into. One was just kind of cruising the back roads, and someone else looked like maybe they were camping out there with their family or something. But people are, I would think you would be flooded, but it's not.
Yeah. But again, people are still in vacation mode. They all think it's party time. They're
well, of course, the government's giving them quote unquote free money. We don't understand economics, so it's free money.
Yeah.
Right. It's annoying. It's freaking annoying, man. And this is going to have far-reaching effects into our economy, not just financially for people who are getting screwed, but also people who are getting laid off. And even more so than that, companies are finding a new way to do business now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to change the way that they're going to hire all these quote-unquote essential workers. A lot of people have downsized and been laid off and everything, and those companies are going to discover that they don't really need those positions.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, it's okay to work from home, and you can work less hours and get the job done. This is going to change the way schooling is done. This is going to change schools a lot.
Yeah.
I think a lot more people are going to start exploring homeschooling options now, which I'm all for. But I think this is going to have far-reaching consequences. I think for the most part, when we flip the switch, everyone's going to go back to their life as normal, being wild consumers and all that, which is fine. But I think there's going to be a pretty good chunk of people that are going to go, hold on a second, this changed the way I live my life now.
Yeah.
Oh, and maybe I don't need all the things I thought I needed before.
Yep.
And it's going to change the way companies do business too. And that's going to be bad for some of their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Life, like we were talking about, life for us is kind of just normal.
Yeah.
We haven't run out of anything. We got a little short on dog food there in the beginning.
Yeah.
But our team, as usual, freaking hooked it up, and we got helped out by another guy who had access to some, and that we ended up not actually running out, but it definitely pulled us through to have enough, and now everything's back on the shelf. And
The only thing that you still can't find, of course, is toilet paper.
Yeah, but we have plenty.
Yeah, and then Lysol wipes.
Yeah, but we also have plenty of those. I mean, we are getting a little low.
Yeah.
Let's just because you're a germaphobe and you use 100 a day or whatever.
Yeah, we're low compared to my standards. That's like my thing.
If we both started with the same amount of Lysol wipes several weeks ago, I would still have a shitload of Lysol wipes left. Because I'm like, I probably don't need a Lysol wipe for that. You're like, that definitely needs also spray. Hose it down. Burn it over, start over. Burn it down, start over.
Like, your toilet paper obsession is like my Lysol obsession.
But at least we, you know, whatever, we have plenty of bowls, so I guess that's a good thing. So.
Yeah. Whatever. But yeah, who knows when that stuff will come back in stock.
I'm looking forward to all this being over so that we can just start the show at 10 o'clock again.
And not have to wear PPE.
And not have to deal with all the PPE issues. And
not have to bring kids.
Convincing people to let us in the building. And
yeah.
Which I, you know, again, have to say thank you to Air 500 Armor as well for, you know.
Still graciously letting us utilize.
Still allowing us to come into our office and do the work that we do. I mean, that they could.
They could.
They could say no, I guess. There's people who can't even go into their own offices now.
Yeah.
So, whatever. What else do we got here? I think that's pretty much it for news, man. I can't think of anything else that happened. Did anything else happen? Was there a natural... Oh, shit! I know what happened last night. Hold on a second. There was a shooting in Canada.
What?
Yeah. Like a dozen people dead, or 16. 18. 18. A gunman kills 18 in Nova Scotia in Canada's deadliest shooting ever. The gunman, 51-year-old Gabriel Wortman, appeared at one stage to have been wearing part of a police uniform. A man disguised as a police officer possibly went on a shooting rampage in the Canadian province of Nova Scotia on Sunday, killing at least 18 people in the worst such attack in the country in more than 30 years. Wow. A police officer was among those killed. Several bodies were found inside and outside one home in the small rural town of Portapique, but no other information really. Bodies were also found at other locations and buildings set on fire. Suspected gunman is dead. Dead officer was identified as Constable Heidi Stevenson, mother of two and 23-year veteran of the force. Another officer was also wounded. There's really no motive. I'm looking real quick. Yeah, they're relatively rare in Canada. Yeah, there's really no motive at all. Just freaking wild, man. So that's crazy stuff for Canada. That's not common or typical for Canada.
Yeah.
At all. Anyways. So that sucks. Like coronavirus, typical, you know, active shooters are not the most grave threat that we face, and prevention is the best medicine. You allow certain things to happen in your society, you're gonna reap certain downsides.
Yeah.
So
let me check the
The video on freaking Facebook is flipping out, so I hope you guys can see us if you're watching Facebook Live, because the new thing is like freaking garbage. But, yeah, Drew's going to check this, and I think you got to take a little break there for a second. That's all right. I'll go off on topic.
Oh, that was Matt saying dude was legit dressed like a cop and had it marked unit.
Yeah, that's right. I just saw that on the news. He had an actual marked freaking car. Yeah. So, all right. Well, Drew takes a break there. I'm going to give you guys the Redwire gear moment. So, Redwire gear moment, we're going to cover quality holsters. A quality holster should be three things. One, it's got to secure the firearm to your body in a way that can handle all of your daily activities. If at any point in time, your gun might fall out of the holster because of normal daily activities, like even bending over to pick something up, laying on the couch, if you can't do a freaking front roll or front flip or bounce around the trampoline or whatever serious activity you want to consider there, without your gun falling out, that's no good. The second thing that it should be is comfortable. If it's not comfortable, you're not going to want to wear it. So make sure that the holster you select is comfortable enough for you to know that your pistol is there, but not be so annoyed by it that it makes you not want to wear it. And it's got to be useful to your situation. If it's a concealed carry holster and it doesn't help you conceal, I don't care who made it. I don't care who endorses it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Put it in the box of holsters that you're more than likely going to freaking acquire over the years and move on, all right? But a good holster should be those three things: secure, comfortable, and useful. It should be part of a complete carry system, which includes the pistol, a quality holster, and a good quality belt. We personally recommend the Wilderness Tactical belts. I like the Low Pro belts. It's what Drew wears as well. It's what John wears. And by the way, everybody, just know John, of course, here in spirit with us and still doing his job for the National Guard during this time of crisis in our country. And he'll be back probably, you know, toward the end of May. So you guys won't see him for a little bit longer, but know that he's still out there doing the best thing he can be doing. All right, our topic today is working under pressure, utilizing different pressure-based concepts to force results. Now, there's a number of different types of pressure that might be utilized in any training or practice scenario. First thing I want to do is quantify what training and practice actually are. Training is the process in where you're learning new things, probably having to slow down or reduce your process to incorporate new concepts. Practice is when we are taking the thing that we've learned and repetitiously performing it so that it becomes reflexive response and it becomes kind of the natural thing that we do. So that's the difference between training and practice. Now, when we're looking to add pressure to either one of those environments, we have to make sure that the pressure is appropriate to what we're trying to accomplish. In other words, there are some things that you will hear of, like, for example, I hear a lot of instructors talk about things like stress fire. They're really nothing more than injury factories. They take a group of students and they put them on a range and they run them through drill after drill after drill, you know, gun up drills or draw drills or whatever with a handgun or a carbine. And then they're like, all right, guys, to complete the class, we're going to have you do this special operations like stress fire. And then they have you flip fucking tires and drag dummies and throw things and make longer distance shots than you've made all of class. And essentially, all that they're really doing is stressing people out, but they're not actually adding pressure in an effective learning manner. And more than anything, they're probably going to freaking hurt people because unless the class was about flipping tires, properly carrying heavy things, or shooting long distance shots, why are we doing it? Why are we doing a final exercise that doesn't focus on the things that we learn throughout the day? So, like, as an example, I'll use us as an example because I think we do a good job with this. Our Top Shot competitions in any firearms class that we teach always revolve around two critical elements. One, the topics that we covered throughout the day, and two, the capabilities of the students. We make it challenging for everybody, but also possible for everybody.
Yeah.
So that way we're not like, all right, guys, we worked on all these skill sets, but our Top Shot's going to require something entirely different. That's bullshit. That's absolute bullshit. And any instructor who's doing that, you need to stop. And if you go to a class and that kind of stuff is happening, guys, get a freaking refund. Never go train with that person again. They do not understand their learning process, right? I'm done with not calling these freaking jokers out. Some jokers out there in this industry. Stop giving them your money. I don't give a shit who they trained with. I don't give a shit where they came from. I do not care about their previous point of origin. What they did and what they do now are not the same freaking thing. Mm-hmm. And because they went through a certain level of selection or whatever does not mean that when you go through a 1 or 2 day training class, you're going to experience that same kind of pressure. You being yelled at is not an effective type of pressure.
That. I've seen where, like, there's two instructors screaming at the person shooting.
That is ineffective for what is happening under that context. Now, like, there's an exercise we do in one of our classes where I'm next to the student, or whoever the lead instructor is next to the student, and is, we kind of jokingly refer to as encouraging them, but as they're having malfunctions that are created in a gun, we're right next to them just telling them to hurry up and make it happen.
See,
and people are dying,
that.
Stuff like
I've
that.
I've seen you do that. You've done that to me before.
But there's a reason that
but
we're
you're not
doing
screaming.
That. We're trying to add a stimulus that we're trying to get people to ignore. So a lot of the times afterwards we'll be like, did you even hear me? And most people will be like, no, I just kind of blocked you out. Perfect.
Yeah.
That's what we're wanting you to do. We want you to be able to be given some stimulus.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like throwing brass or rocks at your students, you know, purposely. People have like the malfunction stick where they put a stick and it covers the ejection port. Look, if a student can see that you're about to cause a malfunction, then they're prepping for that malfunction.
Yeah.
You're not adding the stimulus that you think that you're adding. They need an unexpected malfunction in order to actually have to solve it under pressure.
Yeah.
You know, you need to dummy load their mags so that halfway through an unknown course of fires, or a known course of fire, I mean, they have an unknown problem that they have to legitimately assess and fix. Mm-hmm. Not just you blocking their ejection port when they can see a giant stick coming out of their peripheral vision.
Or just blatantly screaming in their ears.
There's certain amounts of pressure that are not effective for conducive learning.
Right.
And so one of the things that we see with pressure is that it's often thought of incorrectly, right? Like pressure, and to kind of bring it back a little bit to what I started talking about, pressure should be something that is stressing the skill set that you're working on.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be yelling at someone or throwing shit at them until they can perform the skill set essentially to a certain standard of, we'll say, flawlessness, all right? Yeah. Me screaming, we taught a class yesterday with a small group of ladies and one guy, and they were all brand new. I mean, brand spanking new. Most of these people didn't even own firearms. And if I would have started adding pressure to that environment by doing anything other than exactly the chilled out freaking way we were handling things, it would have been ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what most people will do is they have their little shooting experiences or entertainment, or what do we call it? Entertainment, mm-hmm. All right? Which we stole from the late and great Pat Rogers. But now they've got people who they're just yelling at them, and the people are falling and they're getting dirty and they're double knee sliding behind a barricade. There's guys yelling at them and throwing shit, and it's dark and they're like, I'm training. No, you're not. You are being entertained,
yeah.
And someone's taking a video so that you can fucking jerk off to it later or whatever while you show all the buddies in the office, look at what a hard ass I am.
Yeah.
When in reality, some old freaking Vietnam vet with a fucking single shot 22 is going to brainstem your ass in the middle of the freaking big igloo because you actually legitimately have no idea what you're doing.
Flugaloo.
The Kung Flugaloo.
Yeah.
All right. So the reality is like, someone just said Glenn chilled out. Yeah, actually when I teach I'm pretty chill. Mostly.
Yeah.
Of course Ken,
completely different person.
Well, this is one of our students talking, so yeah.
Oh.
I am pretty excited. I'm very passionate about my job, so I'm definitely excited when I'm teaching. But the reality is like there is an effective way to add pressure.
Yeah.
So like one of the ways, and I'm just going to speak from experience here. One of the ways in training, again training, not practice, but training, that we add pressure is by the continuation of the progress that we put people through. So as an example, in a defensive handgun or defensive carbine class, which are probably our two most popular shooting classes, we're going to start with a real basic equipment selection process and the safety rules. And we're going to get people lined out on that so that when they step out onto the range, they are as dialed in as they can be,
yeah.
Right? Now, when we start, okay, here's how we load the gun effectively. Here's how we start shooting with good marksmanship. Here's in a carbine class, here's how we're going to hold over appropriately because we always want to fire the most accurate shot possible. There's never a time where I'm like, ah, fuck accuracy. I want accurate fire, unless I'm doing suppressive fire, which guess what? We don't do anymore, so it doesn't matter. But we're always going to be trying to fire the most accurate shot possible. So, okay, so here's our holdovers. Here's how we're going to do things. Then we're going to look at it from an aspect of, here's our standard of marksmanship.
Yeah.
Now we're going to take that standard of marksmanship and we're going to start moving it, right? Now you have to move back and forth to different distances and you have to apply that marksmanship utilizing different speed concepts, right? Now we're going to take that and we're going to start adding malfunctions, unknown, unexpected malfunctions, which require proper assessment and a remedial action. Now we're going to take that and we're going to start moving it around. Right? We're going to make people move all over the damn place. We're going to let them choose where to move. I'm not going to tell them one step to the left, move. I'm not going to do that shit because that's not effective pressure-based training. Now, as I'm going, and while they're doing this, they still better be loading properly.
Yeah.
They still better be getting good hits. Then we start changing targets on them, targets that require a thought process. Is this a shoot? Is this a no shoot?
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to apply my level of marksmanship to this training? Or to this target, I mean. Do I need to hold over on this? Do I not need to? Can I blaze away at this with a little bit lower standard of accuracy, or is this a small percentage hit?
Yeah.
Like, so then we continue to add that. And then at the very end, it's now we do a top shot competition with all the students. We're going to take all the skills I just mentioned. We're going to put them in a time constraint. We're going to make people perform with a limited number of rounds in a limited amount of time against each other.
Right.
That's how we're going to add the pressure. So now you're like, oh shit, that dude just did it in 15 seconds and he only dropped one shot. That means I either have to do it faster in 15 seconds or I can't drop a shot. Which one's it going to be, you know? So as you're working through that process, that's how we're adding pressure in training. So as you're looking to add pressure in your training, which we defined earlier, the difference between training and practice, what we're trying to do is build on those skills. So when I'm training on my own, outside of, you know, teaching somebody, when I'm doing my own training, how do I add pressure? When I'm not practicing but training, I'm legitimately trying to work on a new skill. I'm not practicing an existing skill, I'm training on a new skill. How I add pressure is I get very proficient with it in the best possible circumstances. Then I start doing what we do in our training classes. I move it. I throw in some unexpected malfunctions. I throw in some difficult targets, small percentage hits, large percentage hits, right? We add some distance. We do all the normal stuff that we're doing. And then we go, if I have this skill set that I'm training, can I do it under all these circumstances? Mm-hmm. Great. Now that I know I can do it under all these circumstances, now that it's time to practice that skill set. In other words, it's something that I do. If someone tried to teach me a new draw technique right now, I've drawn my pistol out of my holster and gone to a high compressed and an extension, I don't even know how many tens of thousands of times, right? In any given class, I do it dozens of times. So I've done it, I don't even know how many times. To overcome that would not be me practicing. Yeah. It would be me training. I got to slow the whole process down. I got to nitpick it apart. I'm probably going to video it, watch it from different angles, have someone else watch me do it, make sure that I'm doing it the exact way that I need to do it until when called upon to do it under stress, I do it exactly the way I've been training to do it. Mm-hmm. Now that I've got that down, now I can practice. Now I can go practice.
Yeah.
And practice is that repetitious movement. Now we start adding pressure in different ways. So I may go train and just work on my marksmanship. And then go to practice it and put marksmanship in with all the other stuff I know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm going to add marksmanship into vehicle fighting. Now I'm going to add marksmanship into combatives. Now I'm going to add that same marksmanship thing I was training into all these other environments and make sure that it still holds up during practice. When now I'm practicing all my skills together. Now's when we add that nasty pressure. Now's when we start shooting in the rain,
yeah,
or training in the rain or practicing in the rain. Now's when we start practicing, you know, can I, even doing it one-handed is a way to add pressure, but that's something I'm more doing in training if I'm working pistol or carbine or whatever. Now I start going, okay, now that I've got that down, let's go practice in the dark. Let's go practice when I'm sick. Let's go practice when I am working on, something else in my life that's distracting me.
Yeah.
Right? Let's go make sure that I can stay focused and practice this skill. Now I'm just repetitiously practicing this skill.
Yeah.
Right? I'm maintaining things. Practice is about a maintenance thing. It's not about a learning or an improving thing. That's training. Training is learning and improving. Practicing is maintaining. Right? I'm out here making sure I can do this thing when called upon to do it. So if you have to work on your marksmanship and suddenly someone's going to throw you into a two-man team movement class or training, dude, you're gonna fucking blow.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do marksmanship and work on that other thing at the same time for training. It doesn't work unless you've built slowly up to it. Like if I've been started working on marksmanship all day, ran through some marksmanship exercise, did some movement exercises, did some communication exercises, did some team communication and movement exercises, and then finally got into a team movement-based situation. Okay, now I can be working all those things at the same time. And now when I go to practice it, it's only because I've trained it to an effect that I'm now, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about what I'm going to say. I've been doing team movement for so many years. I don't have to think about how I'm going to communicate with someone. Not anymore. You know, even if there's someone totally new to me, I'm like, okay, no problem. I'm going to say these things and I'm going to expect this response. Easy.
Yeah.
Right? If they don't give me that response, I will be more direct with them if needed. Simple. Practice, again, is that repetitious thing that we're doing to make sure we're maintaining. That's where we add the nasty pressure. You want to do stupid fucking tire flipping and shit? Practice, not training.
Mm-hmm.
That's during practice. I'm not going to take someone who's still struggling getting their gun in and out of the holster effectively or hitting a target and go, now I want you to do all that and flip this tire. this thing, you know, I have no idea if you even physically know how to do well.
Yeah.
I don't even know. You might hurt yourself doing this. No clue.
And then what? Isn't that, don't they have like liabilities for when they do shit like that? What if somebody actually really legitimately injures their back? Or
people hurt themselves all the time doing that kind of shit in stupid classes. Absolutely. And then the instructors just go like, well, that's training. That's training.
Yeah.
Semper Hula. Whatever stupid shit they want to say. It's like, it doesn't matter, man. That's not training.
Yeah.
Even if you look at it from the military perspective, which is where most people pull this. Guys, anyone here, anyone listening, which is a huge majority of our listener base, who's been through basic training. I don't care what level of training you've been through in the military. They do not start weapons training day one while they're yelling at you.
Yeah.
They turn you into a receptacle that can receive information effectively, work with your team effectively, follow orders effectively.
Yeah.
Then they give you a gun that's dry, and you dry practice, and you dry practice. You dry practice because the military sucks the fun out of everything until you fucking hate it. You were so excited to get your hands on an M16. Now you hate M16 because you've held one dry practice doing dime drills for hours on end, laying on the freaking parade field forever, right? It sucks. It's hours of that shit. Then finally you get to go to the range, and under incredibly controlled circumstances, they give you ammunition in an incredibly controlled environment, allow you to fire straight down range with no movement from a prone or a fighting position, shooting position. Completely supported the entire time. No offhand shit. And then that continues to build until finally, one day in the future, you will get to actually flip that switch from semi to burst. I'm from the old M16 days. From semi to burst and shoot three rounds at the same time. And it's so amazing. And this has been weeks of you with this gun in your hand before they let you do that shit. Before they let you put a gas mask on and fire your weapon. And by the way, we still haven't moved at all. I mean, this is all, finally, they'll let you move a little with unloaded guns. Dummy guns most of the time.
Yeah.
Then maybe unloaded guns, you get to move, communicate, and you literally walk it. And then you run it. And then you're diagnosed. And maybe you are yelled at along the way for sure if you're fucking it up. Plus, that's an effective mode of, or manner of communication for that particular environment.
Right.
And so then you continue to move and you continue to do your thing, right? Until eventually they let you go live with blanks. They ain't gonna give some boot-ass bitch freaking live rounds and let them run around behind each other. That would be disastrous. So they give you blanks. And if you run out of blanks, you gotta yell bang, bang, bang. All right? And finally, one day, you'll get to a regular unit and you get to do all that shit for real and you'll start back over at the beginning.
Yeah.
Where they will not just, oh, you went through basic. Well, here's a weapon. Here's some ammo. Feel free to run around shooting shit. Just don't shoot anybody. Good luck.
Yeah.
Have fun in combat. That's not the way that that works. Never has been the way it works. Real people who don't ever go through that kind of training at all have no idea what the real training process looks like.
Yeah.
It is days, if not weeks, of one or two concepts. Let's drill this thing in. I mean, most military shooting schools are minimum 4 to 6 weeks. It's not that many opportunities for, and even when you're doing it, you don't have a ton of opportunities to just be shooting all the time.
Yeah.
You know, a shooting school is not like, there I am on the range, 8 to 5, shooting all day. It's like, and there's classroom learning.
Yeah.
There's weapons learning. There's all kinds of briefing and didactic stuff. And I'm not applauding the way the military does it necessarily. I'm just using that from a base of experience. I'm not even, and same thing with law enforcement. I'm not applauding the way that they do it either. I don't think that that's necessarily effective adult learning for everybody or needed for everybody. But the point that I'm making here is most people go to a one-day training class and go like, I'm trained.
Yeah.
Do I need any other pressure? I mean, the instructor was a former MARSOC dude and he screamed at us a lot. He wore his full kit. And he has fucking full sleeve tattoos, which is critical.
Yeah, we saw that this yesterday out at the range. Was fully out kitted instructors with tattoos walking around. Everybody else in regular clothes.
Dude.
New rant.
No, I'm going to keep this one under control.
New rant.
So
I want to hear the range.
I see at the range, and I've been doing this job for a long time. So I constantly see at the range people that if I showed up to take a class from, I would immediately leave.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. I'm 100% not kidding about that.
Yeah.
If I showed up to take a basic pistol class, or if I showed up to do a basic shooting experience, and some dude's wearing a fucking chest rig, you know, if I was like, hey, me and the guys want to get together and shoot some full autos, and I showed up, and all the dudes were all in freaking camis and chest, I would be like, I'm the fuck out of here, dude. These guys are jokers. They don't take this seriously.
Yeah.
They think this is a show. This is firearms, man.
Yeah.
It's fun. Come on, dude. Take it seriously.
Yeah.
You know, when you show up to a basic CCW class and the dude's not concealed carrying, why the fuck are you even there?
Yeah.
Your concealed carry instructor is not concealed carrying.
Yeah.
Leave. Leave. Get the refund or don't, but leave.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we drove past several classes where it's, you know, these guys are freaking fully kitted out. They got their drop leg. Yeah, they're the only ones. It's not like their students are wearing that.
Yeah.
Obviously, I get it. We have to kit up sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We kitted up a couple weeks ago because all of our students were kitted up. It was literally a kit class. So everybody shows up in their kit and everyone's learning about that, how it works, et cetera.
I'm not going to test my gear in a basic handgun class. I'm not going to wear my
testing it?
Yeah, because you're just standing and stagnant shooting because it's a basic handgun class. So
people are often surprised when they show up and we're dressed like this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I have either a logoed hat or a logoed shirt. Sometimes I wear both. But I usually have one or the other. And if I wear a logo of something else, it's usually something that I would support, something I don't mind showing off to a student. Like, I'll wear, like, my Redwire hat here or my Asymmetric Options t-shirt or Immediate Action Combatives or something like some other person I support, because I don't want them seeing me wearing a brand I don't support. You know, I'll wear a Vortex hat maybe with my Independence Training shirt. I want to have a certain brand on so people recognize who I am and who our instructors are. But it's like, our guys show up to every class looking normal.
Yep. And literally.
Here's the way I look at it. Unless I'm teaching law enforcement, military, or some kind of kit class, right? Some kind of gear class, I want to be able to go out to dinner afterwards.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Without having to change all of my clothes.
Here's the thing though. Some of those guys dress like that all the time because they want that all the time recognition. Like they walk into a room and think they're super fucking important.
Well, and that can obviously be true, but I mean just like wearing multicam and something, and don't get me wrong, sometimes I'll freaking throw on my multicam pants because they've got, you know, built-in knee pads and they're really durable or whatever, you know, because I've got some nice pants. If I'm going to go out teaching a long-range class or something where I know I'm going to be getting up and down off the ground a lot in a prone position, or I kneel a lot next to students a lot in those classes because they're on the ground shooting or they're in a kneeling or a sitting position, and in order to talk effectively to them, I need to kneel down and or squat down or something like that. And so, like, I want those kinds of pants. So that's, like, there's obviously an acceptable standard. Or sometimes you just have, you know, training pants, right? Like, you notice Chris, one of our guys, you know, he wears his his multicam pants quite a bit. Totally acceptable in the types of classes he's wearing them in. He's not wearing that to a CCW class.
Yeah.
But we show up to teach a defensive carbine class, or, you know, he helped with the Renegade Precision Rifle class a couple weeks ago, and totally appropriate environment for that kind of clothing.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, if I'm going to go take a long-range class and I'm doing it for hunting, I'm going to wear my hunting clothes. I want to know how my hunting clothes work out in an environment like that, right?
And again, it's one thing to test or even test your pants or test your clothing, especially the summer months when it gets really hot. You know, we have people that wear some of their clothes because they're out there pressure testing their clothes, pressure testing their gear, and that's totally acceptable. But when you have an entire instructor team kitted out and you're teaching a basic class, I can't but just giggle.
No, so yeah, when we drive past a range where everyone's doing static shooting with using their handguns off the fucking table, and the instructor's out there head to toe OD green with the drop leg rig and a freaking chest rig on, I'm like, and everyone else is dressed on normal street clothes. I'm like, that's entertainment right there.
Yeah.
That guy is what that guy wants to focus the class to be is him, not the student, but him. Yeah. I want to look like my students.
Yeah.
If I stand in line with my students, I don't want to stand out.
Because, again,
I want everyone to look like everybody else.
is, why wouldn't you want to, if you're teaching a basic handgun or even a defensive handgun, it's like you're not going to be fully kitted out when you're going to the grocery store.
Yeah, when I'm drawing my pistol in a parking lot.
Yeah, when it could be something that you have to apply it there. So it doesn't make sense for it, as in you would think you'd want to train in your regular clothes as an instructor and give that persona like, hey, you're not going to be in these cool, you know, I'm a cool guy.
So it's like where we expect to see gear from a pressure testing standpoint, let's get back to that for a second. From a pressure testing standpoint, pressure testing your equipment, like Drew mentioned, we expect to see that in like a carbine class because most people, if they have time to grab a carbine, here's the reality, guys. If I have time to grab a carbine,
I'm putting on my chest rig.
I have time to grab other shit.
Yeah.
All right. If I'm in a situation where I'm like, I need a rifle for this shit.
Yep.
I'm either putting on a carrier or I'm putting on a small chest rig.
And that's the thing. We have both. So, and they're both easily accessible. So if you have the time to grab that, then it's flugaloo time.
And so in that situation, it's like, So in a class, I expect to see people show up wearing that. For people who don't normally get to wear their multicam or their tiger stripe or whatever's cool these days, I expect those kind of clothes to show up in a class that's outdoors where people need to test that kind of shit. Yeah. In an indoor class, no. You're going to go take a class in an indoor range. You don't need to be showing up in your freaking multicams with your chest rig and shit. You ain't going to be doing anything in an indoor range where you're even really going to be able to functionally test that stuff.
Yeah.
In an outdoor environment, hey, let's see how hot these pants really are.
Yeah.
Or how cool these pants really are. Or a couple weekends ago, how rainproof these pants are.
Mine were not.
So it's like there's a lot of those kinds of things where it's like, if I'm going to be in those kinds of environments, now we're pressure testing the gear. You know, how much abuse can this piece of equipment really take?
Yeah.
You know, so yes, there's pressure testing equipment just as much as there's pressure testing concepts. Along in either training or practice, I can be pressure testing that gear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long is this battery life going to last on this thing? But how do I need to pressure test gear? Like, to segue into that for a second, like, I don't think, if I'm looking at a new optic, you don't need to be able to drive a hammer with the optic in order to prove that it's a good optic. I don't think that needs to happen. And I see people doing that in their testing. I don't think that's necessary. You know, they take a rifle and like, we drove over it and then we threw it off a 5-story building and then we, you know, buried it in mud and picked it up and shot it. And I'm like, Jesus, like, are you in 1940s Russia? What are you doing that requires that level of capability from your equipment? I'm not saying I don't want something that's durable. Of course I do. But does it need to be that durable?
Yeah.
Don't you be able to drive a nail with my optic? Probably not. Do I want my optic to be able to take a couple good hits? Yeah. But honestly, if I'm driving nails with my optic, it's probably too fucking heavy of an optic.
Yeah.
If you can drive a nail with an optic, that's pretty damn good, right? Yeah. It's a pretty heavy optic. So, so in my perspective there, it's like when you start testing gear, when you're testing concepts, you're like, dude, you need to be able to fully test concepts, right? You need to test that all the way out. But when you're testing gear, it needs to be pressure tested to the extent that you know you're going to be using it.
Yep.
You know, if I get new rain gear, I can literally just put it on, go get in the shower, turn a blast shower on, go stand in the rain gear and go, did I get wet? Right? Lift up my arms, put the water all over myself. Did I get wet? No, I didn't get wet. Great. Rain gear works.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to go out, and next time it's raining, I'm going to go test it out there. You know, does that mean I need to go start doing double knee slides in the rain to see if the rain pants can hold up against it? Not if I don't expect doing double knee slides. Probably not.
Not with your knees.
You know, I double knee slide with my knees too much. There's not going to be a lot of double knee sliding left in my future. So it's like there's a situation where you're pushing it too far. And now you're just trying to break shit to break shit. And I see that kind of pressure testing done. And some of it's kind of funny, like Matt over at Demolition Ranch. You know, he's literally just, he's just doing that for fun. And he's sponsored by a bunch of people. And it's part of his job. He makes money off of that whole gig. And so it's part of his job legitimately to make those videos. And so that's cool. I like to go like, wow, how much can you beat the shit out of something and it still functions? That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that's necessary for most people. You need to pressure test something to the extent that you realistically need to use it.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to talk about for sure, to make sure we get this in before we run out of time, is timers. people think that timers create pressure. They don't. Timers do not create pressure in any kind of performance. Timers record time.
Yeah.
People create pressure. So if you're being stressed out by a timer, then you are adding the stress to the situation, not the timer.
Yeah.
So don't think that adding a timer to your training or your practice is a way to add pressure. It's a way to have a standard, and it's a way to measure that standard. But it's not necessarily pressure other than your own pressure to perform.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I see some people totally not stressed out by timers. I look at timers very differently than the way other people look at timers. I don't look at timers as, hey, turn that down. I don't look at timers as a way to constrain me. I look at timers as a way to allow me to do what I'm here to do. They open me up. They release me. They yeah. don't restrict me. Most people look at timers as restricting. I have to do all this stuff in 20 seconds or 6 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever if they're at a competition. You know, that oh, I have to do all this stuff in a certain amount of time. It's like, no, no, no. Hit the button so that I get to do all these things. The time given is sufficient to accomplish the task. And if it's not, then I will do the most I can under that time.
Yeah.
One of my favorite matches was one of the hard as hell matches years ago where they had two stages that were impossible to complete all the tasks. It was impossible.
About, yeah.
You had to choose before the timer went off, what are my strengths? What can I do?
Yeah.
Like there was a part of the stage where it's a whole bay, all the knockdowns are down. Under time, you had to, and this is the second part of the stage. You had to run around and set up all the knockdowns, but some of them are really far away, like 40, 50 meters away. So it's like, is it worth a sprint all the way down there to set up that popper and then sprint all the way back? Not only is that time, but can I make that shot? Now I'm gassed. I got to shoot all these other, and then you had to climb a tower. And from the tower, you had to shoot as many knockdowns as you could, all the ones that you had set up. And that was then the restricted time frame. So mm-hmm. it's like, for most people, that was too much, right? It was yeah. like, I didn't run down and set up that 40 or 50. It was like, waste of freaking time. Oh, hold on, guys. Facebook is doing whatever it wants. Are we still?
I have it up here. It's still going.
Still going?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. I guess it's still going. But in that, oh, standby. I see what's happening here. Oh, cool. It tried to pull the video while we're recording. Fuck you, Facebook. All right. So
it never stopped.
Whatever. Thanks for changing everything once we, you know, just used the same platform for years. Thanks for making it more difficult. But it's not worth it for me to sprint down there and set that thing up, then sprint all the way back, climb up on this tower, shoot the other 12 or 15 that I've set up and try to make that long range shot, knowing that you only had the second half of the stage to do it was like 30 or 40 seconds to set everything up. And I saw people time out just setting up freaking targets.
Yeah.
It's like, or you probably more intelligently should have sat up the ones you knew you could hit, get your ass up to the top of the tower, shoot everything you knew you could hit. Like that to me, that's good pressure.
Yeah.
Because that is pressure to think. That is pressure to assess. Before this timer goes off, what am I best at?
Mm-hmm.
And the first half of the stage was a similar kind of setup with the rifle or a carbine. And so it was like, before this thing goes off, what can I do? Realistically, what can I accomplish? Forget everything else I can't accomplish. Doesn't matter. I'm going to take the penalties for it. Doesn't matter. That's how this stage is set up.
Yeah.
No one's walking out of here without penalties.
Yeah.
You're just trying to pick how to take the easiest penalties. You know? So that to me, that's how a time setting can create pressure. Otherwise, if it's a normal stage, dude, they give you enough time to complete the task in hand.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, well, then you don't. Now you go back to your training and you say, what did I not accomplish well? The timer added no pressure.
Yeah.
I missed. I didn't run fast enough. My reloads were junk. Whatever it was.
Reload at the right timing.
Forgot to manage my ammunition.
Yeah, which is my big thing.
Ran out of ammunition. Yeah. Slide lock is never a good thing under the clock, right?
No.
So it's like, that's not pressure. There was another cool stage we did one time which was based on in a different match that was based on realistic. We did all the stages based on like realistic military engagements. This one was based on the Mogadishu Black Hawk Down thing, mm-hmm. And they made this badass mock-up of a Black Hawk that was down, and you had to recover guns throughout the stage, and it was all based on what the Gordon and Shug Hart had available to them to defend Michael Durant. Mm-hmm. And so they, like, you had to recover your rifle, and then you only had enough rounds that they had. So you had, like, 20 rounds. And it required 20 rounds to neutralize all the targets, which meant if you blazed away and missed or whatever, you would give yourself penalties.
Yeah.
So you really had to take your time, you know? And then you recovered your pistol. And then when you recovered your pistol, then there was a certain amount of extra things you had to shoot with the pistol. And again, you had limited amount of rounds and you had to get all your hits. There was no leftover rounds. Then you had to recover your shotgun. It was a 3-gun match. You only had so many rounds for the shotgun. You had a limited number of rounds and you had to get all your hits, you know? And then you had to drag this heavy sled that kind of mimicked, you know, Durant's body and pull it behind cover and engage from behind cover. Like, that is pressure-based to me because now I have to make sure I'm assessing all my skills properly. Mm-hmm. Don't screw this up, yeah. You know? And so that's how you can pressure-base things with a timer.
Right.
Using a timer alone is not creating pressure. It's just recording time. That's it. So other elements that people need to do, especially in places like Arizona, where it's really hot, or if you're in a place that gets really cold, that is pressure-based training or practice, either one, preferably practice, with adverse weather conditions.
Absolutely. That's huge. I think that people don't realize, because when they really want to go train is when the weather's nice, when it's not hot, it's not too cold. And so they're like, oh, yeah, I'll go train now. It's perfect timing. Same thing for hiking. People, you know, people don't work out or run in the, you know, blazing hot heat. And it's stuff that they need to, because when they do, it's like eye-opening for them. They're like, holy shit, like, I need to drink more water, because hydration's huge, because then they're like, wow, I definitely don't drink enough water. Or they just, you know, they just can't hang.
Well, and now you're testing, you know, you are testing, like, how do my shoes perform in the heat when I'm hiking? How do my socks perform in the heat while I'm hiking? Or you know, on the other side of things, how it perform in the cold when I'm hiking? How do I hold on to my gun with the factory, you know, grip when my hands are drenched in sweat? You know, can I even access my tools effectively when I'm freaking soaked in sweat? Well, you're never going to know that unless you go out there and do it. But you have to test those skills once you've done the training.
Yep.
Once you have a good solid draw technique, now you go pressure test it.
Yep.
While you're practicing. It's the same thing with, you know, other things that we do. Hiking, running, hunting. All those times, you should be pressure testing both your skill sets and your equipment before you are out there in that environment. You don't want to go out there and go, okay, now it's time to learn how to do all this with brand new gear.
Yeah.
Or now it's time to go learn how to do all this with brand new concepts. Like, definitely not what you want to be doing.
Yeah.
You want to go out and practice those skill sets, adding pressure during the practice, not the training.
Yeah.
During the training, you get the stuff right. It's like going to the gym. I don't go to the gym and see how heavy I can lift before I know how to lift. I mean, I would if I was doing CrossFit, but outside of that, all right, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to have someone teach me, or I'm going to self-teach, right? However I need to do it, however I can afford to do it, or however I'm capable of doing it, to make sure I'm lifting properly. Then once I'm like, okay, my lift is good, it's clean, now I pressure test it and go, okay, now how much can I lift?
Yeah.
Okay, now I max out, right? Whatever, X pounds is my max. All right, now that I've maxed that out, go to the outside gym and do it in the sun.
Yep.
Right? I mean, we went to the gym one time and it was raining, and our gym, when it's open, not right now, unfortunately, but it has this awesome outdoor gym, which is kind of sort of shade covered, but it's like that netting, so it's not protected from the rain. And I went out and worked out in the rain, doing only the exercises I absolutely knew I could do right.
Mm-hmm.
There were exercises I skipped because I was still working on my form And I'm not going to do those in that adverse condition. That's a freaking injury factory waiting to happen. So for me, it's like, all right, I'm going to go out here. I'm going to do these exercises out here when it's wet, it's a little cold. My hands are losing some feeling. I'm only going to do the exercises I know how to do, right? So that's, again, when I'm pressure-based training or practicing, I mean, I'm doing it based on the good training I have. When we're doing the same thing with running, I'm not going to go out and try to blast a marathon without knowing how to run properly, right? When I first started running with Drew, Drew was like, "Who fucking taught you how to run?" And I'm like,
"The army."
Between being a caveman and the army, that's who taught me how to run. You know what I mean? I'm like this, you know what I mean? And I'm a boom, 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 you know? And she's like, "Well, try this different technique." And what was the first thing I did? Slow down my pace.
Yeah.
Get down this technique. Fuck everything else. I don't care about performance right now. Yeah. Performance is out the window. Let's change the way my foot is striking the ground.
Yep.
Let's change the way I'm utilizing my upper body. Oh, look, I got better. If I improved not trying hard, imagine what I'll do when I try hard. Mm-hmm. Now that I've got the training part down and now I don't have to think how to run, now I can start pressure testing it. Now I can go out and run a freaking half marathon with you. Now I can go
without any training.
All right. Well, I mean, capability, right? But like now I can go out and we can run in the rain or we can run in the heat.
Yeah.
And we can pressure test our capabilities to run in those environments. Now I can go more effectively trail run because I'm running properly. But during the training part of me running, I thought I knew how to run until someone watched me run who knows how to run and was like, you're running like a caveman. You know, like you need to, if you run like this, it'll be way more efficient. It'll be less strenuous on your body. Your shoes won't wear out the way they're wearing out. It used to wear out. You know, because I would supinate, go out, pronate,
yes,
maybe out, supinates in, pronates
out,
whatever it is. I was like wearing out the outsides of my freaking running shoes because of how I was running, heel striking and all the horrible things you're not supposed to do. I was doing all of them. And then Drew's like, no, don't do that. And do it like this. Back off my performance, train myself to run like this, being very, very conscious. Boom, on a sidewalk. Like, how can I most perfectly measure this way is to run on a flat, even surface.
Yeah.
Okay, now that I've got that down, now we're going to practice this under some pressure. Now I'm going to start adding that time constraint to myself. Now I'm going to start adding speed. Now we're going to start doing it on the trails. Now we're going to start doing different things to really practice those concepts. So the difference between training and practice. Training is when I'm trying to build a skill. I usually have to dial things back to change or alter something I'm doing or learn something entirely new. Practice is when I'm practicing that skill. Now that I've got it down and I'm not going to get it wrong under some pressure, practice is where I start adding the pressure.
Yep.
If you guys have some ideas or methods that you use to add pressure to your practice, or you disagree with what we're talking about, or you think that what we're talking about is interesting and you want to hear more about it, remember, you can always send us an email, info@trainingaz.com. We're happy to get your guys' feedback as always. Remember to send us your show ideas, patrons especially.
Yeah.
And thank you, patrons, for sticking with us through all these weird times. But patrons especially, make sure that you are giving us your show ideas. It's your show ideas that drive these shows. Today was a requested show. So the more you guys give us ideas, the more we're going to do the show. So few of you guys give us ideas that pretty much if you offer up an idea, we're probably going to do it. And if you sent us something and we haven't talked about it yet, I apologize. It slipped off our radar. I mean, send it to us again and we'll happily talk about it. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. With Independence Training, we're looking at setting up courses in other parts of the country later this year. So keep an eye on that because we're going to be traveling a little bit more than we have in the past. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to check out the other shows on the network. All kinds of great stuff going on the Heroes Media Group. Next week, we're going to have a kit dump. We haven't done one of those in a while. We're going to bring a piece of equipment in, dump it out, show you guys why we carry and what we carry. And it's going to be, because we've been doing a lot of long-range stuff lately, our kit dump is going to be our long-range shooting pack. And so what do we carry in long-range shooting packs and why? So look at that next week for our kit dump. Until then, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.